Dennis Prusik and his outdoor friends ply the waters and woods of northern Wisconsin and beyond, printing for our enjoyment the best of their seasonal notes on things like fishing and hunting and berry picking and birding and gardening and wildflower and weather lore. All that comes together in the 2008 Wisconsin Nature Calendar for Home and Cabin. Dennis Prusik is with us today to talk about phenology and to talk about the 2008 Wisconsin Nature Calendar, and really pleased to have him along. And certainly, if you have some questions as we move along today, I hope you'll join in with your phenology questions at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890, 263-1890. We'd also love to hear your own comments about maybe things that you keep track of as far as phenology is concerned, and let us know, and let us know about changes that may have occurred as well over time in your own recording of events. Dennis Prusik with us by phone. Dennis, hi. Thanks for taking time to be with us today.
Hi, Larry. Glad to be here.
Let's first describe phenology for us.
Well, I think of phenology in two ways. First, it's kind of a way of looking at the world. It's an understanding that patterns of weather very much shape the patterns of plant and animal life in a given area, in this case, Wisconsin. And when you study it intimately, you really see that. Most people know this but kind of think it's a general connection. But as you study it, you see the connection is very tight. It's very meaningful, and the slightest change in weather produces a very significant change in plant and animal behavior.
Yeah, it sure does. And you've been doing this for a long time now.
Yes, you know, I hate to think of it, but I'm getting old. but I've been doing it for 29 years at the level of the study that I'm doing it now, and I've actually been keeping a journal since I was a teenager. Mostly concerning with fishing, and a lot of modern-day phenologists are fishermen. Traditionally, phenology has been, of course, to help learn how to have more success with gardening and farm crops, and it's a way of studying the world and help you become more successful in it.
Yeah, and you've not only in putting together your calendar, you've not only have your own notes and comments in here, but you've conscripted a whole bunch of characters to help out.
You know, that's one of the great joys in doing the project is I've made a lot of great friends around the state, many whom I've never even spoken to on the phone or met personally, but we correspond regularly, primarily through email, and with some of them through regular mail. And they've been with me for years and years and years, and they have their own unique way of looking at the world, and they keep their own records, and once a month they send their records to me, and I include them in my study.
Yeah, and the end result kind of is a calendar, or at least one of the end products is a great calendar.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, definitely. You know, the particular nature of a phenology study is that it's most useful as it continues to be current. It's kind of like a car where, you know, the day after you end a phenology study, it depreciates in value really severely. So keeping it renewed is an important part of it, and to me, sharing the information is how it keeps getting energized, and I keep getting that feedback that keeps me energized and doing this kind of a study at this level.
Yeah, what information do you provide about each day in the 2008 calendar?
The calendar is divided into two sections. In the bottom half, I have the regular calendar, the Roman calendar we're all familiar with. And in that, I've included almanac information of sunrise, daily sunrise, daily sunset, record high and record low temperatures, and normal high and normal low temperatures. And those are for Green Bay, Wisconsin, kind of what I consider the phenology center of the state. And I also have at the top of each month, for those people around the state who want to kind of adjust it to be more specific for their area, they have the ability to do that. And then on the bottom half of the calendar, I also include the phases of the moon. And then I've included an active part of the calendar, that is, I put two nature events in each month, except for January, there's just one. So I have 23 for the year that you can follow wherever you live in Wisconsin, whether you live in a city or you live out in the country, in the south or in the north part of the state. These are things you can look for and kind of keep a phenology calendar actively participating during the year 2008.
And give us an example of one of those.
Let's pick June here, just because I got my calendar open to June. I have two events there, and the first one is when peonies first bloom. I try to use common bushes that most people would have in their yard or in a yard nearby. And what I have in the bottom part of the calendar is I have the peony first bloom average dates for southern Wisconsin. That would be June 5th. And the average date for central Wisconsin, which would be June 8th. And the average date for northern Wisconsin, which would be June 14th. And then on the bottom, I have a paragraph so you can read what companion events to expect to happen in your area when the peony bush blooms.
That's pretty cool. We've got callers online to visit with you, Dennis. So let's go to the phones. And Tim in Kenosha, I believe, is first. Tim, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Great show. Yeah.
Thank you.
It kind of piqued my interest here because I just read an article by a gentleman by the name of Wayne. I believe it's pronounced Assayas. He's in Highland, Maryland, and he's a beekeeper, as am I. And he started weighing nectar flow, having a hive on a scale. And he started doing some research on the initial time when blossoms started blooming, and he's finding that they're blooming 2 weeks earlier in his area. So he happens to be with NASA, and he's got a website where he's encouraging other beekeepers to get involved in this project of weighing nectar and logging when things bloom.
Oh, that's cool. What's his website?
His website is Wayne, W-A-Y-N-E dot E-S-A-I-A-S.
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 Okay, E-S-A-I-A-S.
Yeah, at NASA.gov. He's also WESAIAS at Comcast.net. He's not making any sort of predictions about global warming or anything. I think what he's indicating is perhaps urbanization may be changing some of the weather patterns in his particular area. But interesting fella.
Yeah, interesting. Comment from you, Dennis?
The first thing that jumped to my mind was the wonderful nuances that phenology studies can take. I had an observer who unfortunately passed away from early cancer out of Oshkosh, who studied many things that were similar to this and in fact had what he called a butterfly trail, among other things, and he would keep track of bee nectar. He would keep track of flower blooms in his wildflower trail. And he had fantastic detailed data that he gave me. It was overwhelming. It was much more than I could put in my calendar every year. I kind of felt bad about that. But he really enjoyed the fact that somebody was keeping track of his records. And in fact, I do have it in my files. And It's just wonderful. Everybody has a different way of looking at the world and a different opportunity to track it using the phenology method.
Yeah, that's great. Tim, thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate that very much. Nice, interesting comment. We'll take some more calls. You can join in, by the way, at 1-800-642-1234. Or if you're in Madison, reach us at 263-1890. And you can email us at talk@wpr.org. And let's see. Oh, we just lost a caller there. And the caller that I had on that we just lost somehow wondered how to get a copy of the calendar. And we certainly want to cover that, Wayne. Our Dennis, I'm sorry.
Yes, it's an important time of year for me when I publish my latest information, and they can get a calendar from me by sending a $10 check. Of course, I self-publish it, so you make the check out to Dennis Prusik, and you add $2 to cover shipping and handling, and that covers any number of calendars that you order. And you send it to me at 1701 9th Street, that's in the number 9, and that's Green Bay, Wisconsin, 54304.
So it's 1701 9th Street, Green Bay, and your zip was again?
54304.
54304. Check for $12 made out to Dennis Prusik, and Dennis's last name is spelled P-R-U-S-I-K. P-R-U-S-I-K. And you can join in with your questions at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison at 263-1890. Give us a call. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking phenology now with Dennis Prusik of Green Bay. He publishes and edits the 2008 Wisconsin Nature Calendar for Home or Garden. It kind of represents a 29-year study of the wild and not-so-wild animals and plants in the state. So we're pleased to have him back with us today. And if you have some questions or comments for him, maybe some things you've observed, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Or if you're in the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. And email us at talk@wpr.org. And just to let you know, coming up at 11:45 today, Victoria Houston, one of my favorite authors, is going to be on to talk about her Loon Lake Mystery Series. So we'll be doing that at about 11:45 today here on the program. But for now, we're talking phenology with Dennis. And a new twist this year is your naming of each month's full moon according to what's happening in the world. And why did you decide? How did that come about? Why did you decide to do that?
Well, you know, when you do a study like this for 29 years, you start kind of looking at the world a little differently. You really get tied very intimately to what's going on outdoors. And I've always seen, I've always heard of lists from, you know, a long time ago when people living on the land used to name the moons accordingly, the full moons. And it always had such strong appeal to me. And over the course of the year, I've had a lot of friends give me lists. I've gathered them myself. I've even had customers send me lists of full moon names. And it's always had such a romantic, almost a magical appeal to it. And when I started looking at those lists and going over them, they always seemed a little bit not suited for Wisconsin. I mean, some things would line up, some things really didn't. And they also didn't line up exactly the way I would like them for our modern times. So it occurred to me that since I already have these nature events that are featured in the bottom half of the calendar that have come organically from what I've witnessed myself from 29 years of doing the project, that would be a good source, a good starting place to name the full moons myself using the information that I've gathered myself.
Yep, makes good sense. Nick in Green Bay's online, so let's go to Nick. Nick, hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, I'm actually a neighbor of your callers.
Oh,
I live over at Taylor Street, and the other, actually about a month ago, there's a huge hawk living in the backyard. And I haven't seen him since the first time I saw him, and I was wondering if there's any suggestions on how to make the habitat a little more friendly towards him. I mean, I've got about 1,000 feet of woods, actually, which is kind of nice.
Huh.
I was just wondering if there's any way to keep him around. I'm trying to, so there's plenty of food.
Yeah. Okay. Well, what do you think, Dennis?
Well, hawks usually have a pretty big territory, and they tend to include, but not exclusively, somewhat of some of the suburbs, some of the built-up city land. They try to usually stay as much away from it as possible, but I find one thing that invariably draws hawks is if you have a feeder, a bird feeder.
That's what I got.
They get very interested when there's a lot of little birds around.
Yeah.
That tends to draw hawks. Other than that, I wouldn't know what to say.
Okay.
Usually their habitat needs is a little bit broader than what you could do in your yard alone.
I was kind of shocked because I was on the internet and I looked over because I usually have birds in the backyard and I saw this huge bird there. And of course, I ran upstairs to get the camera. And as soon as I opened the door, the dogs went out, and he saw that right away, and he was gone. I was like,
oh. Well, that's the sort of things that tend to scare them away. If you have a lot of feeders out, I know this, that one of my observers is really an expert at drawing birds and other wildlife into her yard, and she's always telling me about hawks. They always come because they're attracted to all the smaller animal activity.
Yeah.
So if you got like a bird bath, if you've got things to feed squirrels, boy, hawks are really attracted to squirrels. I'm always amazed that a hawk can actually take a squirrel.
Yeah.
And anything else, all the small birds, they'll tend to visit your yard a lot more then.
Yeah.
We're kind of concerned about the neighbor dog because he's got a little chihuahua, and we're kind of concerned that the dog's going to disappear, but thanks for your answer. That's awesome.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too, by the way, at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Talking phenology and the Wisconsin Nature Calendar with Dennis Prusik, who's the guy who publishes and edits that 2008 Wisconsin Nature Calendar for home or a garden. What's the lore regarding birds singing and cold temperatures, Dennis?
Well, when I started doing this study in a very serious way, I made a commitment to getting outside three times a day, once at sunrise, once during the middle of the day around noon, and then once at sunset. And what I quickly noticed is that you really get a lot of bird singing around sunrise, especially in the summertime. But as you go into winter, of course, the number of birds around kind of thins out as they migrate southward. But we do have a pretty strong contingent of songbirds that overwinter in Wisconsin. Birds like chickadees, cardinals, even jays and crows. A lot of people don't think of them as songbirds. But and what I noticed is there's a strong correlation between temperature once we get into winter. If the temperature in the morning was 24 degrees or colder, the bird singing really went down, and a lot of days there'd be none. And then when it got to be 25 degrees or warmer, and the birds would all of a sudden come out of nowhere and do a lot of singing at sunrise. It just so happens that I checked this with the high temperature. And the temperature at sunrise is usually the low of the day, so if you add the low and the high together, it also produced an average temperature that was usually above freezing. So somehow these birds kind of honed in on the fact that that day was going to be warmer than freezing and seemed to like it and seemed to sing because of it. And I had noticed this very strong correlation quite early. I've checked it continuously since that time, and it's worked really well right up until two winters ago.
Ah.
And two winters ago, we started having very, very unusual winters in Wisconsin. Winters I'd personally never seen before, and when I looked through the climatological records I've not been able to find in the over 100 years of records that they have. We have created what I call a donut winter, a winter that starts out with solid, cold winter temperatures, and then all of a sudden in the middle there's a hole. It was spring-like warm for almost a month 2 years ago. Last year we had the same effect for about 3 weeks. And this has seemed to confuse the birds to no end. It has really upset and has really kind of almost destroyed this relationship of temperature and sunrise that was so strongly there for over 20 years. And I've had it's almost maddening sometimes that I'm expecting them to sing and they're not. And other days, you know, I don't expect them to sing and they are. Sometimes they're doing the pattern and then sometimes they just seem to think, you know, we're not sure what's going on. So I'm interested so far this winter. I've heard a lot of birds singing and we've gotten very cold temperatures, colder than normal. Many of the temperatures are at sunrise below 24. They do seem to be singing a little bit more as it warms up. I'm just wondering if this winter, which so far has been colder and earlier than we've had in recent years, if we're going to have that donut hole in the middle again. I'm kind of half expecting that we might. We might have maybe a little less than we have recently. It might be only two and a half weeks, but I'm kind of looking to see if we get that repeated phenomena and what effect it has.
Interesting. Well, we have some more callers online. Again, you can join us at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. And we will turn to Mary in Madison next. Mary, hi to you.
Hello. Yes, I'm wondering, has your guest ever encountered a badger? And what are they doing in the winter? Do they hibernate?
Okay.
Boy, I'm just not the person to ask that question. I never have encountered one. I have talked to people who occasionally, some in the network, will give me badger sightings, but it's very rare. And yet I hear from those in the know in the state that there are badgers in the state. I just do not get a lot of observations concerning them.
Yeah, actually, badgers are nocturnal, so Mary, so you're not as likely to see them out because they run around at night more and do their feeding. Their diet is earthworms. They'll eat almost anything edible. They'll eat small rodents, frogs, slugs, fruits, nuts, pretty much anything you want, anything you can imagine. They don't hibernate in the sense that some animals hibernate. They'll put on a lot of weight in the autumn to see them through the lean winter months. And when the earthworms and the other foods are harder to come by during the winter, they sleep a little deeper, a little longer. And in very cold weather or wet weather, they might stay underground for several days at a time. So that's kind of...
So they have a den?
Yeah, they'll den up. Yeah, they're good diggers. They're very good diggers.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. And let's take some more calls here. Mary in Hustisford is next. Mary, hi to you.
Hi, good morning. I think this fits. I have first a question, and then I want to know a little bit more about the calendar. For 3 years in a row now, I take house plants out for the summer season, and I bring them in the fall, and I usually wait until the weather's getting pretty cold, but for 3 years now, toads have been in there, and if I catch them in time, I can get them outside, but invariably, one of them is there, and one is in the pot downstairs right now, so I'm wanting to get some help. I've tried putting them in aquariums with crickets, and they just perish. They don't sustain. So I would like some input on that. How can I help these toads maybe before they come into the house? and now that one is here. And my other question is the calendar.
Yeah.
What does that calendar, is it the typical Gregorian calendar with information on it?
Yeah, we can go back and talk a little bit more about your calendar, Dennis, and maybe go over some of the things that we went over briefly earlier.
Yes. Well, my calendar has two parts to it. In the top, instead of the traditional large color photo, instead is a journal, and it is the journal of my own personal records from the year before, my outdoor observations. They cover the broad gamut of a little fishing, even a little hunting, a lot of wildflower, bird observations, weather observations. And then included in that, of course, is a lot of great additional resources from my observer network. I have people all over the state. The majority of them kind of are in the northern half of the state. But they add their information, so I get a lot of width and depth and breadth in my observations because they add a lot of great things to it. I'm really dependent upon my friends' network of observers. And then in the bottom half of the calendar is the traditional calendar that you're used to seeing. It has the 365 days a year and the 12 months and the dates January 1st and so forth. But what I've done is I've overlaid some information. I've included it in there. There's a lot of space where you can write your own notes if you want, and nature observations or doctor appointments. But I've also included sunrise, sunset, record high, record low, normal high and normal low temperatures for each date. And then I have the phases of the moon. And I also have two events for each month that are nature events that you can look for yourself to see when they happen, and I've included the average dates for southern, central, and northern Wisconsin. And then along with some information about what other things you might see. For instance, if you see the lilac bloom, that's one of the events in May to look for. There's a whole list of other things to look for, such as orioles returning in your yard.
Interesting. Okay. Thanks, Mary. Oh, and by the way, you wanted to know about toads, too.
Yes, what to do with these toads.
I think Larry is the person here who should be answering that, because I nothing comes to mind right off the top of my mind that I could help you with here.
Do you have access to the internet, Mary?
Yes.
There's a website I know of. It's called Totally Toads. And it's TOADILY.
Okay.
Totally Toads, and the website is something like I think it says something like it's the place on the web where toads come first.
Very cute.
And yeah, totally toads, and you might take a look at that. They have a lot of information on that website.
Thank you so much.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Kathy in Wauwatosa, it's your turn. Hi, Kathy. Thank you for calling.
Hi. The calendar sounds wonderful. I had just a question for the guest. I've heard that every seventh year there's a rough winter, and then every 21st year you get a really, really cold, snowy, blizzardy winter. Is there any validity to that?
There are a lot of patterns in climates that are fairly well known, and I think you're referring to two of them. These are patterns that are not necessarily exactly reoccur, but they have a tendency to reoccur. When I'm referring to weather and when I'm looking at it, my viewpoint is not quite so far out. What I'm studying is very intimately, for example, the early snowfall and the early cold weather we have this year so far, and exactly how that's impacting bird and animal behavior. For example, just generally speaking, over the length of my study, falls have become later and later, and winters have started later and later. And one of the things that happens is for some of the late migrants like robins, they really don't like to leave the state, and it takes a good snowstorm to kind of drive them out of your area. And you know, those are the sorts of things that I really kind of focus on. It's kind of a more immediate year to year. Only occasionally do I look at it in a broader sense for patterns. And I haven't really looked at my own data to see these kind of patterns that you're talking about. The only thing I've done recently is I've looked overall at my patterns to see how they reflect what I have learned about global warming. And I must say I found quite a bit within my own study that reflects that, but nothing that in particular addresses what you're talking about.
Ah, interesting. Thanks, Kathy.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. And let's go to Pete in Kenosha for a question next. Hi, Pete. Thank you for calling. Pete, are you there? Oh, I think let's see here. What, did we lose Pete? Must have lost Pete. Let's try Kim in River Falls. Kim, hello to you.
Hi.
Thanks for calling.
Hi, nice to talk to you. I have the same toad problem most every year. I won't have it this year because we moved. I didn't have any plants outside. But I'd be reading and I'd hear something moving around in my pots and I thought, oh, whatever. And then there'd be a toad. So I take the toad and I put it in an ice cream bucket with a little tiny bit of water and a rock and throw something green in there every now and then and put it in a cold room. And I really don't do anything with it. And then in the spring, I put it outside. And they usually make it through the winter.
Right. So pretty minimal care there.
Yep.
So and when you're talking about green, what?
I throw some lettuce in there. Oh. Or if I have some plants that are leaves fall off, I just throw them in there. And
there you go.
Yeah, they're just fine till spring.
Right. Thanks, Kim.
You're welcome. Have a great Christmas.
Yeah, you too. Merry Christmas to you. Iola in Richland Center, it's your turn. Hi, Iola. Iola, are you there?
It's your turn.
Good morning.
Hi.
I have a story, toad story too, but that's not my question. But anyway, I had had a chow, and it was in the doghouse. And one morning when I went out to feed it, the dog was sitting outside the doghouse. And I thought, well, that's unusual. So I looked inside the doghouse, and there did sit a toad way in the back. So I took the toad out and put it out in the garden. Well, of course, the next night, by the morning, the toad was back in the doghouse. So the dog decided that it was going to live in the doghouse, too. So it went in, and all summer long, the dog and the toad lived in that doghouse together. Then I thought, well, now when winter comes, you know, the toad will hibernate, which it did, evidently, someplace, I don't know where. But anyway, bright and early one spring day, there was that toad again. And that went on for 4 years with that toad.
Oh, that's a great story.
But now my question is, what good are blue jays? They eat the little eggs out of the nests of the little birds, and they kill the little birds. Now, please tell me something good that a blue jay does.
Well, I tell you what, I can make a comment, and I think Dennis can too. Dennis, you want to go ahead?
Yeah, I kind of think that relates back to the interest that the fellow from Green Bay who called in was interested in hawks. A lot of people who feed songbirds at their feeder, they just absolutely hate hawks because many of the hawks, like a Cooper's, will swing in and nab one of the songbirds. And they just, you know, people, and it's understandable, get very upset about them. You know, they've been feeding these little tiny birds, and they've fallen in love with them. But it's kind of one of those mysteries of life, you know, that... there's this predatory chain. There's this linkage between one species feeding on another, and in turn it will be fed on by something else. And they all seem to have their place. And I know just one example. My brother, who's 9 years older than me, when he sees a blue jay come at the feeder, he runs outside and chases it away. And he just hates those things, and I love them. So, well, and I've seen him take bird eggs right off a morning dove nest, you know, you hate to see that, but yet mourning doves seem to, as a species, thrive very well.
I have to tell you, there's been quite a bit of research on this. There was an extensive study done of blue jay feeding habits, and only 1% of jays had evidence of eggs or birds in their stomachs. And most of the diet was composed of insects and nuts. So they do eat, most of their diet is insects and nuts, and it's more occasional. I think they got a little bit of a bad rap on the they don't eat as many eggs or baby birds as some people think. So in the grand scheme of things, they eat a lot of insects, they eat a lot of nuts, and that's pretty much their diet for the most part. Dennis, I wanted to let you know there's also your calendar, the 2008 Wisconsin Nature Calendar. There's also a phenology calendar produced at Pheasant Branch Conservancy in Middleton, and that's kind of cool. And I'm sure you don't mind at all having a little competition out there.
Oh, gosh. It's amazing how many people I have given me calls over the years that I've done this who the Milwaukee Audubon Society had a calendar for a number of years, and they used to call me up all the time to get tips on what to do and how to do it and what my experiences were. And yes, I welcome it. I know how hard it is to do. It's invariably, when I've seen these projects start up, they do real well for a year or two, but they're hard to maintain, and boy, I just wish them luck, because this is the sort of thing you want to see. The more the merrier.
And in terms of your book, it's $10 plus $2 for shipping and handling. And you can write to Dennis at 1701 9th Street in Green Bay, Wisconsin, 54304. So it's 1701 9th Street in Green Bay. And then the Friends of Pheasant Branch, that's a southern Wisconsin, Middleton, Wisconsin, actually. Their address is P.O. Box 628242, big P.O. Box there, 628242 in Middleton, 53562, and it's also $10. And maybe we can put those up on our website, those addresses. Jim Packard says, yeah, we'll put those up. So we'll have how to order either one of those calendars. Dennis, thank you so much for being with us today. Appreciate it.
I really enjoyed it, Larry, and I can see that I'm going to definitely have to add toads to my study.
Okay, thanks, Dennis. Dennis Brusick, who is the editor and publisher of the 2008 Wisconsin Nature Calendar. And again, we'll put up the information on how to get Dennis's calendar and the one from Pheasant Branch Conservancy as well on our website, so you can have access to that. In both cases, they're $10. Coming up, we're going to be talking with Victoria Houston, author of the Loon Lake Mystery Series, right here and set right here in good old Wisconsin. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.